Hey, this is Zeus Von Rock from Angel Spit, and you are listening to WMUC-FM College Park.
Neuropsychiatric disorders are one of the leading causes of disability in young people around the world, and TERPs are no exception. One out of three TERPs will feel depressed at one point during the semester. You are not alone if you are feeling down. Here at Maryland, you can talk it out with fellow students who are going through the same problems in group therapy sessions, or even have a one-on-one therapy session with one of our many experienced therapists. The campus mental health center is open from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday. If you or someone you know needs help, come visit the health center and be a healthier TERP.
You're listening to WMUC-FM College Park 90.5. Did you miss us? We're about 30 seconds late, but that's all right. Welcome to Moral Hazard. I am your host. You guys know Moral Hazard. I'm your host, Stephen Fung. Today is December 4th, 2025. And if you have been keeping track of the Moral Hazard Instagram, that's on at Moral Hazard Show or something like that on Instagram, then you would know that today's a very special day. We have a very distinguished guest with us. That guest is none other than Professor Justin Reyna, Esquire of the Robert H. Smith School of Business.
Hey, yo, what's going on, everybody?
Yeah, Justin Reyna, Professor Justin Reyna. Is it all right if I call you Justin or
yeah,
Professor Reyna?
Yeah, you know. Whatever you feel comfortable
with. All right. We'll do whatever comes to my brain in that instant.
Honestly, what is more comfortable for you?
I'm more of a Professor Reyna guy.
Yeah, let's do Professor
Okay.
Reyna, yeah.
All right. We'll do Professor Reyna. You know? It's showing respect.
Yes. Yeah. For any of my, you know, any of my people that are out listening, they're going to enjoy that.
Cause, yeah.
You know, like, yeah, they don't know me as
It's
that,
like so. Fealty. I'm
they
pledging believe, fealty
they
to
still
you.
Don't believe.
They don't believe you're a professor?
They don't believe any of my accomplishments. So this is always good if someone...
Do you have anyone you want to shout out?
Nah, I don't.
From the, okay.
I'm not giving anybody credit today.
All right.
No.
Well, Professor Justin Reyna is a... faculty member. He's a professor at the Robert H. Smith School of Business here at UMD. He is the professor of currently business law, right?
That's right.
It's just business law right now. You also taught ethics.
I've done that.
You did intro to business value chain.
That's right.
100 level.
Yeah.
And you've also taught graduate courses as well, right?
Yep.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
And you have received many awards. Right? Am I not mistaken in that?
That's true, but don't, you know, like, you know, no, yeah.
Yeah, teach, I wanna, yeah, it's good, some good
some,
awards, some good awards.
Some
all right,
awards
we're getting, we're building up your credibility right now, all right?
I guess I guess the listeners need to know,
yeah. Well, this is the real
the
deal.
The bona fides of who they're listening to.
I've never made a reel to promote a guest before. Usually it's just a graphic.
Oh my God, when we were watching it, we were dying. My wife was like, they're really excited to have you. I'm like, I have no idea why. But hey, man, whatever works, it's going to be all right.
You know, before it was just random people that we knew that we'd bring on. So now we've got a bit of credibility now. This is big. This is going on my LinkedIn. It's going on everything. Yeah.
Cool, man.
This is going on my resume.
Yeah, put it on there. Right.
I'm putting on my resume. So you are Esquire, means that you are a lawyer.
That's right.
You've passed the bar. You are registered to practice in
DC.
DC. Nice. And you did family law, right?
Yeah, I've done a lot of different type of law, but my favorite part, like corporate law was good, but it wasn't family law, it was actually foster care law.
Foster care law,
which is a little
okay.
different. This is when like the kids are removed because of, you know, they're in an unsafe environment. Mm. So I was the child's attorney. There's a lot of players involved.
Yeah.
I was representing children.
And gotcha.
They were my clients. Ages 0 to 21.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So have
in Baltimore City.
Yeah. Why don't you tell us about your most annoying client?
Oh man, you know,
no.
you know, It wouldn't even be. Yeah, I don't think anyone ever asked me about Melissa Noy playing with their kids. Yeah. I'll be the worst person on the planet now if I'm like, oh yeah. Man, which one?
Yeah. You're talking about. You're like, yeah. All my clients were so annoying. Oh, they were so dumb.
They were always asking me questions. I'm like, oh,
yeah. No. Nothing worse than having a client who hasn't even graduated high school. No,
but it was pretty
good
cool.
Work. Yeah.
And it really launched, you know, I did a lot of work. It was a lot of work because it's Baltimore City Legal Aid. And, you know, they just give you, you know, it's like 300 clients, like, boom.
Yeah.
You do them. Every day in court, it was wonderful. And after that, you know, I eventually started writing software. You know what I mean?
Yes. Your front end, your back end.
Yeah.
Wow. How long have you been doing that?
Since 2011.
Wow. Yeah. So you're not even like a vibe code guy. You actually taught yourself.
Oh, no. I hate this. I'm so into code that I hate it beyond a passion. Like, it's,
oh, yeah. That's how you know.
Because I'm in it all day. And it's so I started my own business and did all that. And, you know, having the lawyer set and, you know, an entrepreneurial set. It was an easy fit to be here over here at the Smith School.
That's pretty cool. And so you're doing work right now with the Smith School regarding AI. Is that correct?
A lot of AI work now with the Smith School. And University of Maryland in general with AIM, with their project. So I'm on their search committee for professors at AIM.
What is AIM?
Artificial Intelligence Interdisciplinary Institute at Maryland.
Oh, that's 3I.
But they shortened it down to AIM, which I'm like, that doesn't make any sense, but sure, man, I'll roll with it. You know, it's like, let's make it easy. So like everybody here, you know, if you are interested in learning about AI, the school is currently launching. You could get a major in you could have a BS or BA in AI here
really?
At University of Maryland.
Yeah. Wait, so you can get the BS in AI? What school is that?
Like, here, no,
this it's the Robert H. Smith School.
But it's AIM. AIM is the school.
Oh, so it's its own separate. It's not within. Okay,
yeah.
Got you.
But they're going to be pulling from everybody. So like, no partnership really with the Smith School of Business. You know what I mean?
Okay. Interdisciplinary.
But since I've done so much AI stuff that, you know, I was able to be over there. So it's cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody cares about this stuff, though.
No. This is business news.
This is
business news. A couple weeks ago.
I'll talk about business, but I don't know, like, you know.
A couple weeks ago, someone told me that they just kind of put it on. Because it's like, it's late at night. They just put it on and like mindlessly like have it in the background while they do their work. You don't look, as long as it's on, all right? That's good for my ratings.
People do that with ocean sounds too. So like we're on par with like beauty and like nature. You know what I mean? We're on par with that. Yeah.
I had a friend who was, I was just talking to him before I came to the station. And he was watching I think Cowboys are playing the Lions right now.
Yeah.
And he was watching that. And also watching another TV show at the same time on the same computer. It wasn't even like he had it on in the TV.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're making that brain atrophy for yourself.
Yeah.
It's great. It's not like the Subway Surfers on the bottom of like the Instagram reel.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You're creating your own personal hell.
This is why we're in the radio. Like, we get to tune off, like, you know, just relax, everybody.
Yeah.
Out there. Just kick back, you know what I mean? Just listen to, you know, these guys talk.
Well, I'm not on the late night because, you know, I'm putting people to sleep. I'm on the late night so that I don't get fined by the FCC. This is intentional. Starting from 10 p.m., the FCC loosens their regulation. So if anything happens, doesn't come back to me.
You can bring a wild card like Professor Raina in, and you'll be okay. All
right, well, you see that button over there. That button right there dumps the last 8 seconds. If you ever make an oopsie, I'll like reach over
we're not dumping anything tonight, man. It's all going to be out there.
Well, hopefully not. But yes, Moral Hazard, for those of you who don't know, that's business news. That's business commentary. That is guidance through the cultural, business, and economic jungle. We talk about Fed decisions. We talk about Mattel making mistakes on their Barbie dolls. That happened like last year. I don't know how I remembered that. That was a funny segment. But yeah, we do just about everything. But one thing we don't do is play music. This is talk only, folks. But you know, we've got a really great episode lined up. I hope, fingers crossed, you know. A lot has happened in the news. I'm not going to do my monologue this time because we got a guest. But this has been a decent news week, considering, you know, not that much has happened in politics this week, I don't think. You know, compared to previous weeks.
Yeah.
One thing we did have, though, was an expansion to the Trump accounts. You know what the Trump accounts?
Yeah.
So, Trump accounts, for those of you who don't know, any child born between 2025 and the end of 2028, any child born between then gets $1,000 to their name in the Trump in Trump accounts. I think it's like a wealth fund that the executive's going to run, and they'll just invest it for you, and eventually you'll be able to pull it out. That's $1,000 you can do whatever with it. You can, you know, pay for dinner a couple times.
We'll find out. I mean,
we'll see what happens.
The vesting part is not, I mean, when are you going to get it? When you turn, what is it? When do you actually end up getting that money? Is it 21?
I think it vests at 21. Yeah, it's somewhere
so like,
in that area.
I mean, we'll find out where you get. I mean, I anticipate that rules change down the road. But sorry, I didn't mean to step on you.
No, you're good. I actually don't know exactly when it vests, but yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was the Trump accounts were tough luck to anyone born at any point before the beginning of 2025.
Yeah, everyone right now regrets being born.
Yeah,
I wish I was born like 2 years ago. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
To get these great Trump funds. Yeah.
But there's good news. There is good news.
All right.
If you were born, if any of you listeners have not yet had your 10th birthday, you are also eligible, or you are going to be eligible, for a smaller Trump fund. $250 is invested by Michael and Susan Dell.
Yeah.
Michael Dell is the founder of Dell Technologies. He made those. Yeah. What are your opinion on Dell laptops?
Oh, I had one when they came out. That was it. That was
really?
Dell. It was Dell.
That was the thing.
When Dell laptops.
Well,
because they kind of like made laptops more accessible for people. Like that was it. So you would. I had a Dell laptop.
You're gonna date yourself right now.
I am. I want to feel like it was undergrad, but it may have been grad. I don't know. That's how old I am, guys. I can't even remember. That time. Yeah.
Well, see, I don't know anyone.
It was that though.
I don't know anyone buying Dell laptops now.
Oh no, I wouldn't buy a Dell laptop at all.
I mean, the Smith School has the Dell desktops everywhere.
Okay.
That's like the default, like cheap desktop. Yeah. You know, you put that in all your libraries and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, he's the 11th richest man in the world right now. And he has pledged, he's made the donation. The transaction has already been made.
How much did he donate?
He pledged $13 billion.
Yeah, he pledged $13 billion. And what did he end up giving?
Ended up giving $6.25.
Oh, okay.
Hey, but, you know, that's $250.
Those are the pledges my dad makes. Like,
that's,
he promises, and then all of a sudden it's like half of what he promised. Like, all right.
Yeah. Well, you know, $6.25 billion. That's a big cash figure.
That's a lot.
Unfortunately, it's only $250 for the 10-year-olds.
But, you know, it's going to grow. Invest $250 now.
Well, if they put it all in the Trump stablecoin, who knows?
Now we're talking about what's going to happen with this money. I don't know what's going to happen with
who this knows money. How they're going to put it. It's going to go into another continuation fund for a private equity company.
We don't know where this money's going to go yet.
Yeah. We have, you know, no clue. It could go straight down the gutter. It could go into Barron Trump's Forex portfolio.
It definitely can.
It goes into his Rain Bet account. He's going to put it all on black.
It could be on the meme coin. I mean, we don't know. It could. Yeah. We don't have any control over this right now. There's really no like control rules on this. So
yeah. And the Trump family's lost a lot of money with crypto. I remembered reading. It's not on here, but I remember reading a Bloomberg article like this week. It was like, their crypto investments have plummeted.
Yeah, but that investment plummets, but they still made their money, though.
Yes. Well, I don't believe it's their investment, just like their coins. Things that they put their name on.
Yeah. But don't get it twisted. They'll still walk out with their money.
Yeah.
They'll get their money. Don't worry.
I mean,
that CZ value drops. It really doesn't matter for in a lot of aspects.
But, yeah, that I, it was a Binance guy, right? CZ. Yeah. He, I forgot how much it was. It was like it was millions. But yeah, you know, no way they didn't take it out.
Well, I mean, so like, what do you think about these funds? These
what
these
the Trump Michael
funds?
And Susan yeah. Dell,
or just the Trump? Funds
oh, look, you know, I lots of love to the Dell family, Michael and Susan Dell, great friends of the show.
Thank you. Yeah.
I if you know, I think. I think Susan Dell may have been pocketing the other $6.75 billion that was pledged. You know, she'd turn her.
You think this is a good thing? You, think, like, you wish you had this when you were a kid. You had the.
Do
had
I wish I had $250 when I was a kid? You know, to look, I would not complain about an extra $250. All right, but also, I mean, you know, I wasn't poor, right? Like this is, they're focusing it towards underprivileged
That's right.
communities.
Yeah.
You know, I'll give them that. That $250 may definitely means a lot more to a kid from an underprivileged community. I was from a more privileged community.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it still doesn't amount to much. That's not crazy buying power. It's a great look, you know. And yeah, I'd want to know how much benefit they're getting from getting in the good graces.
Oh. Oh,
you know,
you think
from
it's
making
transactional
the donation.
Then?
I mean, what was Kimmel getting pulled off of?
Yeah,
you know.
Maybe there's an indictment coming and they're getting a pardon. I mean,
no, maybe they need an Intel style bailout. I don't know how Dell's doing right now.
Right, exactly. This is where we live in when like someone makes a donation and we got to act like we're making jokes because. Underneath that is like we're in a transactional society right now.
Yeah, well, I'm making jokes because I have no power to do anything else. All you can do is make jokes. Well, I also forgot to vote, but you know that's neither here nor there.
But you know, with these payments, with you know what I find interesting in this whole fund thing that they created is mm-hmm. that, I mean, let's go back like 20 years from now. Where would this money be? It would be probably backstop with like you like a U.S. bond.
Yeah.
Okay, but that's not what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Like, what happened is our own economy so bad, like, that we are not going to we're not going to put the investment of this into a bond, which is what people did historically in this mm-hmm. country, and to support the government.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this is like a bond helps the government, helps the people, while providing some type of return down the road. This isn't a bond. This is a fund. So who's... Eventually, who's the beneficiary of this? It's the market.
Well,
the market.
Yeah.
As well, if historically, the market needs help. Like, I mean, what?
Oh, like to...
This doesn't go to the United States. This goes straight... They get this. They invest it into the stock markets.
Mm-hmm.
So who's getting them? Like, the return may or may not come. We're in speculative world right now. Bonds mm-hmm. are super secure. This is all speculative. But who's going to pocket all the money? So the debt... This Dell Foundation put this billions of dollars, and it's going to go straight into the stock market.
Yeah. Well, the Social Security, the government invests Social Security, but they only do it in Treasury bonds.
Right.
That's all they do.
There
have been pushes to move it towards, investing in the stock market, you know, giving it to wealth managers, private wealth managers, stuff like that. That's never happened. No one has ever taken that seriously.
Yeah.
Now we're in a time where... That's also, changing the way that the U.S. government manages the Social Security fund is also in conversation right now. Trump this week said that, you know, in reference to Social Security, I don't want to quote him directly because I don't remember the exact quote, but he was saying that, you know, doing it in the way that Australia does it could be a huge benefit. And Australia invests it in, it's like a sovereign wealth fund. They invest in markets. And imagine your Social Security benefits get lost because the market crashed. That would be terrible.
That's where we're at. So
that's
like,
not you, secure at we, all.
Yeah, but depending on who you talk to, right? So like when you woke up this morning, you didn't say like, man, you know what? I really want my Social Security to be making more money. Nobody, like, that's not a thing. Some people woke up this morning and said, I would love to have the ability to have a... You know, like, if I'm managing this fund, I mean, I get for every transaction that happens, I'm getting nickels on the, you know, I'm getting paid off of everything that I manage.
Yeah.
They want that.
Yeah.
And then, so, like, people are pushing for this because they want it. And they'll tell you, oh, man, it's wonderful, it's great. But, like, there's no one here ever wanted that. This is, now we have this. We have it. We're getting closer and closer. This is a death by a thousand cuts. Like, this is it. Mm-hmm. Do this Trump, these Trump payments, and it's going straight to the stock market. I find it interesting how much embedded we're going into the stock market.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, Social Security benefits aren't that high right now. You know, the model didn't really sustain itself all that well. And, you know, like a lot of retired people, they have nest eggs, and then Social Security is just a benefit on top of that.
That's right.
But, you know, I know a lot of people, they were old, so I knew a lot of people who seriously relied on Social Security paychecks.
Absolutely.
And it's not that much. It's not that much. I mean, if you're living in inner city Baltimore, that's all you really have coming in. It's really not a lot at all. You know, you got to get life insurance and all like that.
But the payments were there.
Yeah, there were payments,
payments showed up.
There were payments.
And it's going to get worse with Social Security. I mean, we could try to fix it, but why is the answer always stock market?
Yeah.
Why is it? Why are we going to a one-time, one-solution mechanism, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all the stories from today, it's all going to go back to stock market.
Yeah. I think the country's risk profile as a whole has changed dramatically.
When we look at the strength of a country, the stock market is not a factor that's mm-hmm. involved in it. I mean, it's a secondary market of... of speculative investment. Like, it's not our GDP, it's not our unemployment rate. Like, mm-hmm. we have metrics to measure the strength of our economy. You ask anybody today, they'll say it's the stock market. We flipped. Mm. We're flipping, and everyone's believing it. So this sounds like a great idea for a lot of people because they're like, let's do more on the stock market. But we've never really, this is new. This is very, very, people have been wanting this to happen for a long time. But
which part?
Real economists.
Which part?
Real economists, make everything into the market.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I mean, if anything bad happens, it's over.
That's the problem. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, shout out Michael and Susan Dell.
Yeah.
Susan Dell, if you're ever, it's 10 p.m. If you're ever feeling lonely, you can tune into Moral Hazard.
Yeah. thank you, Susan. Thanks for pumping the stock market. It needed your help, I guess.
Moral Hazard's here for you, Susan.
This is what a lot of people talk about when they talk about reallocation of the economy. Right? Here is this is what everyone expects to happen. Like, all these, billionaires and trillionaires, they're going to now redistribute their wealth, mm-hmm. right? And this gives the image that that's really what's going to happen. But these are just, it took, like, how long did it take? Hey, Dell's like, it's 2025 now. Thank you all this time later that you're doing this.
Yeah.
Where's everybody else now?
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, 11th richest person in the world for giving 10-year-olds $250.
Yeah.
very, very gracious of you.
I mean, everybody should be doing this. Let's go. Like, where's everyone else? All the trillionaires just kicking back a couple bill.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a lot for you, but this is going to be a one-shot deal.
It's not going to lead to anything big. I don't know how many people are out there, calling $250 life-changing money. I mean, even for some of the most underprivileged people in society, you're not calling $250 like life-changing in the slightest. That's enough to live for a little.
When was the last time we had money go out like this? COVID, right?
COVID, yeah.
Tell me, people just went and just spent it. It went back into the economy. Like, I mean, it's a good thing, but I don't know. But I'll come back. Probably we'll come back to that topic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So we got another thing, right? Sam Altman. We talk about him a lot on the show.
Oh, he's a hero to the
He's a recurring character. He's a recurring character on the show. Yeah. My opinion of Sam Altman has fluctuated over the, year and 3 months that I've been doing
this show.
This
happens when you get to know somebody.
Yeah?
Yeah, you know somebody, like, right off, and you're like, oh my God, this is great. And then the second time you hang out with them, you're like, okay, like, it's a little weird.
Yeah.
You know, you get to know them a little better, then the shine wears off, and you get to see what they're really about, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's certainly changed. And it's been an up and down. It's been a love-hate relationship with Sam Altman. We're a little more in the distaste era.
Oh.
OpenAI, Sam Altman, in an internal document, or actually it was an internal Slack channel that was leaked, announced to OpenAI, this team, that they are in code red. This is following Google's release of Gemini 3 in the past week. Sam Altman has announced that it's code red. They need to push the new ChatGPT model, the new GPT.
Yeah.
It's
called Garlic or something.
Yeah,
like
it's codenamed Garlic. I'm a fan of Garlic, you know. But Ooh. You know, OpenAI is in. They're in a valley right now. It's been bad. It's been bad since like this summer.
One hit after another. Yeah, man.
I don't know if you know if you've ever played with GPT-5.
Yeah.
But
how you like it?
That was a huge downgrade. It was
right.
It was very disappointing.
Yeah.
Because you know I had as its release was coming up. This was like early August,
Yeah. And
they gave it to these influencers, and these influencers were saying, "Well, this is the greatest thing I've seen in my life. This is the most brilliant AI model. Things are really changing." And then they release it, and it's like it's milquetoast. They cut the power on it, you know. It was very disappointing. It was a very disappointing model.
And that's across the board. Everybody, I don't really find very many people. They're like people that enjoy it. They're like, okay, here's how you got to work it. But you know, AI is not supposed to be like, here's how you work it.
Yeah.
AI is supposed to be like, it works on whatever, like your natural language, it'll do it. So like, if you have to like pump it and do some like prompt engineering, that's not what AI is. The promise of AI is that you're not supposed to do prompt engineering.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So... Yeah, like, sure, you could work it, but I'm not interested in working. I want to just get a quick answer to my question. You know?
Yeah, they increase the amount of work you need to do to get it to do its job.
And then maybe it's better.
Yeah.
I don't know yet.
Well, you have to learn how to basically scam the model into thinking harder when it responds.
Exactly.
Because they just did the routing where it's like... You know, if it thinks your question doesn't require that much thinking, it's going to allocate how much thinking it does.
All right, so like this summer we have a subpar, like boring model that came out when it's supposed to blow everybody's minds. Everyone's like, okay, whatever. And now we go from that to a code red.
Yeah,
which
it's
in
a
my
code red.
In my color diagram, that's the bad one. That's the red is bad.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
like. There's no other worse color than the red. Like, we went from to the worst color. Everybody, hands on deck. Stop what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So that all the other projects that are happening over at OpenAI, they now are canceling that. Everyone has to work on this.
And for a company that claims to be for the betterment of humanity, having another company release an AI model also that people like. And then now you're panicking to release another model, like on a rush timeline. I think we're kind of letting the veil slip. You know, I don't really see the, you know, how early on they had the apocalyptic, you know, they were drumming up the apocalyptic fears. Like if we don't pay as close attention to these AI models as possible, it's going to take over the world.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And now Google releases Gemini 3 and, you know, they're scrambling. They're like, we've got to get this model out as soon as possible.
But like, tell me an industry where like, you know, like, Ford comes out with their version of their SUV. Does, like, Toyota issue code reds? It's just like, oh, okay.
Well, Toyota doesn't issue code reds because they know the Ford will never compete.
I'm just saying, what if all of a sudden they, like, do, you know, something better, and they're like, oh, crap. They're like, okay. Like, everybody, like, it's just normal code.
Yeah.
Normal code, competition, you know, of course that's happening, like, tell me if a band or like music artist is out there. Like, did Taylor Swift issue code reds when Bad Bunny became the number one streaming artist? Like, she's not going back there telling her team, like, drop what you're doing. Everybody, like, but OpenAI is code red right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a, That's something that's happened in emerging markets before, where it's like, I mean,
there we go. That's what it is.
When Apple released the iPhone,
yeah,
and I'm sure you've seen the BlackBerry movie. Yeah, yeah. When they put out that terrible.
Actually, they should have done a Code Red.
They did end up doing a Code Red, and they ended up releasing that very terrible.
Yeah.
Phone. I forgot what it was called with the touchscreen. It didn't work. But you know, OpenAI going on Code Red. Face value.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that...
No, but like...
It's not that big.
The iPhone was something that... It wasn't just a level up. It was something completely different.
Right.
This is just a normal level up.
Yeah.
So why is there a Code Red? Why is it Code Red?
In my opinion, GPT-5 allowed other competitors to kind of get a lead up on OpenAI. Yeah. Right. I mean, you know, OpenAI's... The way it was structured, it just gave away so much of the game, yeah, because they had Microsoft invested in it. I remember I went to New York and I had for Smith in the City, and he had talked to Microsoft people, and like they get information from OpenAI on like what's going on, and now it becomes free. You know, there's no more edge,
right?
And so because of that, they kind of ended up giving away the lead in a very big way, and now Google comes out with Gemini 3. People like it. The download rate is catching up.
Yeah, the Nano Banana is like way better than, you know, with chat. You know,
yeah, is Nano Banana Google?
Oh, you're right. I think
it is Google, right?
Google, yeah.
Okay, yeah. But they also did Veo. Veo was the video as well. Yeah,
I haven't checked out the video one, but I did, you know, hop over to Nano Banana, see what we could do, and I was like, okay, yeah.
Google's
way
been
faster. I mean, it was like 1,000 times faster than ChatGPT.
Google's been eating OpenAI's lunch.
Oh, but
absolutely,
it makes sense. It's like so OpenAI. How do they get? Google already has a natural funnel of information that they could like use.
Yeah,
they've been having people's data for
exactly
forever.
OpenAI has to pay Google.
Like the model already, like they're doing a Code Red because, you know, not just that they're in the tank right now. What is it? What are we at now? Like 700 bill? That's how they're in the OpenAI themselves are in the hole. $700 billion. They make $13 billion of revenue a year.
Oh, yeah, so they don't make anything.
And I know 13 bill sounds like a lot, but not when you're in the whole 600 bill turning into like 700, 800 bill next year. You're chipping away at nothing. So Code Red, because we can't even not turn a profit. There's no hope.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, all of the hyperscalers are in the hole as far as the models go.
At least Google has their own data.
Yeah.
At least Google has products that are out there. OpenAI has just these things.
Yeah.
Google has other stuff. They're a monopoly. They just, they were supposed to be broken up, and now they're not. That is an existing monopoly. Mm-hmm. They're all over the place. They're embedded everywhere. I mean, they could just scrape all the YouTube data. I mean, it's just, it's Code Red but like, should we care that it's Code Red?
For Sam Altman?
No, should we care?
Should
you
we
and I
as
right
people
now,
care?
We're human beings out in the world.
No.
Oh, no,
it's
man.
It's not going to be... I mean, when OpenAI rushes and pushes out a product that, if it works, that's great. OpenAI gets to keep its consumer users. If it doesn't work, then everyone's just going to go to Gemini.
Yeah.
In the grand scheme of things... If OpenAI falls on their face on this, I mean, it's not going to... Well, I guess it could. It would affect, the circular financing.
You got to follow the script
here.
This is, you know, the finance person of OpenAI was literally out saying that the government needs to backstop OpenAI. And the minute you hear that you need to backstop, why do we need to backstop you? I mean, go ahead, like... when the Commanders have a horrible season this year, do they got to be backstopped right now?
But like, has the government not already backstopped?
They already,
They've already. I vaguely remember the government bought a major stake in Intel.
There we go. So that's what they're asking for. So what is happening? You know what I mean? Why is it that why is it that we can't just be like, oh, whatever, OpenAI, like, see you later, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, just like Dell laptops. No, it's like, no one cares about Dell laptops we're not using anymore. So let them go away.
Yeah. And so that's a good segue.
Thank you.
Because
it's like I've done this before.
Yeah. Because we wanted to talk about the circular financing concerns.
Why should you care if OpenAI goes down?
Because it's a big question. So, you know, we've talked about the big Bloomberg graphic on circular financing. It's a very popular, it's probably one of the most popular diagrams of this year.
Yeah.
And it shows how venture capital and product purchasing flow through, you know, across major players in the tech world.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you've got NVIDIA at the center of it all. There's also Microsoft, OpenAI, Oracle, AMD, X, Intel.
You're naming the companies that have a 90%. They control 9% of all economic growth in the United States right now. You just named a couple companies.
Yeah,
that's 90% of all our growth in this last year. That doesn't make any sense. Freaking NVIDIA is they're bigger than the economy of Japan, and Japan makes some pretty awesome stuff. They're not like
NVIDIA is just designing chips.
It's just chips, man.
Yeah, and I mean they got their lunch eaten by Google too.
Oh yeah, so if anybody doesn't know, Google used their own chips. They're not using the chips that are out there. They have in-house chips.
They have designed tensor processing units, TPUs.
Yeah.
And so now the players outside of this diagram. Notice how in this diagram, Google is not in this diagram.
I don't see Google on the diagram.
Meta is not in this
diagram. No, Meta's not in there either, huh?
They have been having a grand old time, you know, doing things completely outside of this, and it is hurting NVIDIA, it is hurting OpenAI severely.
Yeah.
Meta and Google inked a, you know, however many billion-dollar deal for those TPUs that Google had developed.
Yeah.
Now they are a major competitor outside of NVIDIA, and they just out of nowhere.
Yeah.
But you gotta give Google credit. I mean, they made the Transformer unit. They made the Transformer. They invented it.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've had their skin in the game for quite a while.
I kind of think maybe there is going to be a diagram with Google in it, but it's just not on this one. You know what I mean? But we'll find
out. That's true.
We'll find
out. I mean, you know.
Probably not, though, actually. Probably not, though.
I mean, Google, it seems like Google's mostly, you know, doing it all themselves. Obviously, they're poaching people.
They're an existing old company that's been in the tech sector for a long time. They know about how not to play these games. Yeah. So what is the game? Like, it looks like when I look at this diagram, and anybody, I mean, I expect everyone who's listening is like, has this printed out.
It's
like
been
a poster.
Weeks. If you haven't looked up the Google, if you haven't looked up the diagram by now, you are not a real fan of the show.
You know, I think like, where do you get your posters from? Like, you put them in your dorm, like, you're going down to Spencer, like, I don't know where you go. Like, I'm sure they have this diagram.
Yeah,
and it's like the black light posters. Like, everyone's looking at it like, yeah, man, I know. Like, all right, I'm on the diagram, right?
Yeah. So, and you were saying, what does it look like, right?
Yeah, I mean, but like, so what's happening? Like, what's the point of this diagram? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you'll notice if you look up, I mean, anyone just look up, you know, Bloomberg circular financing diagram. If you look at it, most of the nodes go from NVIDIA to a smaller company, and it goes two ways. One way is NVIDIA giving either investment or venture capital to these smaller funds, and the other way is these companies paying for goods and services from NVIDIA.
Yeah.
And that raises a lot of concerns.
The same amount of money.
Yeah, it raises a lot of concerns. Yeah, there was that Oracle deal where they literally gave, it was like $20 million for $20
million. Yeah.
And there are concerns. There are concerns that a lot of people are having about this pseudo vendor financing model, where instead of, you know, debt, it's just equity.
This is interesting. Like, you know, when I see this, you know, a lot when people talk about this, there's a lot of gaps that they're not like, I don't really see people like really like tuning into. You know what I mean?
What do you mean?
So, like, just your common person that's like excited about their 401ks or going to be investing. You know, this whole AI thing, people like are jumping in because they can see the growth and it hasn't stopped, and people are out there screaming the promises, right?
Yeah.
So you look at NVIDIA, all my friends were like, oh my God, I got to get NVIDIA. And they're buying like high and they're going in and they're just, and what they see is that, oh my gosh, OpenAI just spent $100 billion on chips from NVIDIA. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, Oracle just bought all these NVIDIA chips, mm-hmm. like Microsoft. So it looks like NVIDIA is dominating the space.
Yeah.
And look at all the money that they're getting. And obviously NVIDIA is now going to R&D that, right? And make better chips and everything like that. But people don't know about this. They mm-hmm. don't know that there's this, that what's, they don't, you know, they don't know really what's happening here.
Yeah.
And on the flip side, there's like, oh my God, look, NVIDIA just invested money into OpenAI,
mm-hmm.
like $100 billion.
Yeah.
So look how awesome OpenAI is, because I'm, you know, so this is happening. And what happened with this is that it uncovered that people just don't know that this was what the story was.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were going to give OpenAI $100 bill and then they then spend that money on your chips, how much money did NVIDIA make? If NVIDIA gave them $100
cash flow.
Yeah, cash flow wise.
Cash flow net zero.
Net zero.
Net zero.
But yeah. But to some people, looks like they made so much money because they don't see that flip thing.
Well, if it...
And that's driving everyone still in there.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
But to be fair, if the AI bet pays off, NVIDIA will make a lot of money.
That's right.
I mean, NVIDIA, I think, to be clear, these investments don't, you know, they don't signal that much danger for investors in NVIDIA. They're
But on OpenAI, because the chips that they're getting, that they're purchasing, have a shelf life.
Yeah.
And that's where everyone's like, okay, well, let's see what's going to happen with these chips. And these chips, they don't last forever.
Yeah.
We're talking about a max life of 5 years. But, you know, people cook these chips. You know, these are on racks being cooked.
Yeah.
Cooked. They're saying, like, these chips are going to last, like, 1-2 years. So the speculative nature on this is that these chips are going to last 5 years. They're not. They're going to last less.
Mm.
And next year, a new chip comes out that is going to do twice as much as what you're doing. I mean, let's just do, like, it's going to be a third. It's going to be a third X on what you're doing now with all your chips, and it's going to cost energy-wise a third less.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get those chips.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly.
Your chips are worthless.
Yeah. The big issue isn't necessarily that the chips physically won't last that long.
Yeah.
But it's more of an issue. It's not quite Moore's Law. Moore's Law kind of died like a couple years ago. But the idea
All laws died.
these newer chips that come out. I mean,
yeah.
So there was the H100 that came out in 2021. That was the big NVIDIA chip. That's where all the hyperscalers started using. It became like the staple. Then NVIDIA released Blackwell.
Yeah.
Blackwell was, it was like five times more efficient than the H100 chips in terms of processing.
5X. And energy use, everything.
Yeah. And if one Blackwell chip is putting out five times, you know, it's five times as efficient as an H100. Now, mark to market, your H100 is at most 1/5 the price of a Blackwell.
And you're going to have to go buy the Blackwell.
You have to. So that's where the real issue is. It's like economic depreciation, you know?
It's there.
Yeah.
Do you remember when, like, China was going to get some NVIDIA chips? And, like, we were like, no, and we were involved. And then all of a sudden, like, they got them, and Trump was like, look, man, they're the old chips, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We let them get the worst chips.
Yeah.
But I think that now that's about to change because of the rare earth talks that they're going on. I think the chips were a part of the deal.
And so this is, like, this is a hall of mirrors. This is scary. So, like, so if OpenAI does go down, we're just talking about, like, it doesn't look good for them.
Yeah.
If they go down, normally we're just like, okay, whatever, man.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, not here. If they go down, it drags every single company that's on this chart down with them.
Yeah.
Which is, like, we got Oracle, Microsoft there. I mean, these are, like, pretty established blue chip companies in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, I mean, how many percent of our economy is that? Ooh,
that's
boy.
A lot. That's it a is lot. A lot. I don't know how much exactly, but I mean, Oracle, I NVIDIA, OpenAI.
15%.
How much?
I think it's 15.
That's a lot. That's
if
crazy.
I remember, if I know what's happening, like if my memory is correct, mm-hmm. I think it's 15.
Yeah,
it's gonna be the.
I mean,
the call board is lighting up. Like, professor, you got your numbers wrong.
Well, thankfully, I've never given out the number. I just figured out that there is a way for people to call in, AI and I will never give it.
AI
to
is
them.
Calling us right now. Like, slow down, guys.
Yeah, but it's hard to see ways that things could get bad. OpenAI losing market dominance to Google. That, you know, that is a really bad hypothetical to think about.
Yeah.
But at the same time, OpenAI is still, they're still on top. They may have said Code Red. They are still the number one AI in terms of usage, in terms of download rate, like the rate of adoption. They're still beating out Google Gemini.
Yeah, but they're not making any money off of it.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that's the big
sure.
issue.
Sure. Yeah. Like, sure. Show me user rates and stuff like that. But like, but we don't. The economy is not, like, you know, your balance sheet is not determinative of, like, how many people are using it. It's how much money's on that you're bringing in.
That's true.
So, like,
yeah.
like sure, they have traction now. But you see now today, traction, you could jump from one to the next. We've seen this in the past with a bunch of, like, different applications.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm too old. I'll bring up stuff that you don't even know about. But, like, there are things that we don't even, like, we all use back in the day. And no one even thinks about it, man.
Can you give an example?
Do you want me to show you my age right now?
Yeah.
There was this thing called MySpace, and there was this thing called Friendster.
Oh, I don't know Friendster. I do know MySpace.
Oh, my God. Friendster was...
What is Friendster?
Friendster was...
Wait.
Oh, look. Maybe Friendster's still up, man. I want to revive my MySpace account.
It's still... Oh, wait. What? I have to get early access. That's like a knockoff thing.
Everybody, before you join Friendster, let me buy some shares, and then we all get on there. Right? Let's revive this company.
What happened to it?
That's what I'm saying. You don't even know what this is, man. And
yeah.
You know how easy it was for us not to use Friendster? It's just like in a blink of an eye. Like, when you use Gemini, like, you just go to the other platform. You just go mm-hmm. BIP over. Like,
yeah, there is no switching cost. There's no switching cost. And, like, that was a huge thing for Facebook and Spotify and all of these current tech giants now. It's like, you know, what are you going to do? Go to a different platform? We've got all your data right here, and you need it. But...
Hey, you want to lose your playlist?
What is Meta doing? They keep at. Sorry, I got
it. His computer just lit up with a Meta like alert warning, and it's
they're,
like
because I used to have a VR headset, and now they're trying to update my thing.
Oh,
but I don't want to let them update now that I know that Meta's
they're listening.
Now that Meta's cutting 30% of their AI research, I'm not letting them update.
You know what cracks me up about this whole thing too is that like let's look at think about other bubbles. Everyone's talking about other bubbles. They'll reference other bubbles and stuff.
Yeah,
like, but the difference between other bubbles and I see it.
Dude, they keep going.
And what we're doing here is that you know like let's look at 2008 with the housing crisis. Mm-hmm. People liked mortgages.
Yeah.
Okay, like let's do .com, you know, bubble. People liked the internet.
Yeah.
Go back to the tulip bubble. People like tulips. Half of the people hate AI.
Yeah. So how long is that?
Do you know what I'm saying? Like half of the population hates everything about this.
Yeah. This is the first bubble where people actually just hate you.
They just hate it. And I'm like, this is a worse bubble.
Yeah.
Like, how quickly, like, people hate this thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And if you, especially if you're creating, like for you, as a college student, like, how's your usage on AI? Do you enjoy using it? Are you down with it?
I used to appreciate it.
Safe space, you could tell me. This
no, yeah, yeah, yeah. Safe space between you, you, me, and everyone listening.
Yeah.
I used to like AI as a concept. Yeah. I mean, I was never heavy into using it.
Yeah.
But I really wanted to see where it went because I thought, you know, it could get so much better.
Because it's fascinating.
I mean, it's kind of,
it's also on a fascination route, but I'm just like on a user route. Like, do you use it? Do you like using it?
No.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know. I've said this before. AI is amazing for people who don't know a thing or two.
They don't know how
but
to
the
do
moment,
something.
But the moment you know a thing or two, like AI, the AI, you know, vision really falls apart.
I had,
yeah?
There was some grad students that came to an AI talk that I did on campus, and they hung around after, and they're like, "Oh my gosh, can we interview you? You know, we're doing this AI thing." I'm like, "Of course, yeah, man." So, so we arranged a time. They're just like, "All right, man, we're gonna build this AI platform for professors," and like, and they're trying to pitch me on this stuff. They're like, "So, like, how much time do you do grading?" And I'm like, "You know, like, I have some written assignments, and you know, I got to sit there and read that." And they're like, "We will reduce that by like, you know, like by 80%. And I was like, "Let me tell you something, dude. Like, I'm going to tell you this right now. I enjoy reading what my, I like doing it."
Yeah.
They're like, "Wait, what?" I'm like, "I will never use your product." And they're like shocked. They're like, "But we'll reduce your work by 80%. I'm like, no. I'm being paid to do the work, man. That's the job. And I like my job. I like reading what students write. And I like seeing what you come up with. And does it take me like days? Like, okay, it takes me some days.
Yes.
But I enjoy doing that. So tell me what AI is going to do. Like, yeah, the promise of that is to take that away. Don't take that away. I enjoy that.
That's a good point.
Don't you enjoy doing some things? If you're a creator and you're a producer, you do things. You guess what? You enjoy doing those things. So like, I can have AI. You've seen my gamification app. You can see that AI did a bunch of that art and everything like that.
Yeah.
But like, it, like, I hate that.
Really?
Oh my God. Because I'm like, an artist, and I'm like, I want to do all the art right there. You know what I mean? Like, it bums me out. Like, I hate it to the nth degree, but I had to get it out, and you know what I mean? Like, and I was trying to prove a point with using AI in the school and stuff like that. So, like, there's a lot of, like, reasons why. But, like, don't you like doing some of these things?
Yeah. And you know what else is art?
Yeah.
Segways.
Right.
And, you know, I'm going to show you the art of the segue, because we actually have to, we have a mandatory PSA thanks to FCC regulation, but I'm going to put this on. It's going to be a great one. It is, let's do the farmer's market.
Oh, yeah,
actually, they're not happening right now, so we'll do something else. Graduate labor union.
Oh.
All right. And Moral Hazard will be right back on WMEC FM College Park 90.5.
Come all of you good workers, good news to you I'll tell, of how the good old union has come in here to dwell.
Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Are you a graduate assistant, research assistant, or teaching assistant at UMD? Are you tired of low pay, long hours, high fees, and no safety net for international students? So are we. The UMD Graduate Labor Union is organizing for collective bargaining rights for graduate workers on campus.
Right now, the administration unilaterally controls our working conditions, but we are fighting to change that. To learn more about graduate labor organizing efforts on campus and what a union can do for you, visit umdgradworkers.org.
All right, that was the Graduate Labor Union in UMD campus. We're back. We're back on Moral Hazard. We got limited time left, but I want to talk to Professor Reyna, because he mentioned that he was an artist.
Yeah.
I want to tell us a bit about it.
I'm fascinated that you want to talk about this.
Well, because last semester I took a class. I took an art class at UMD. It was Art 469, Professional Practice. I am not an artist. I learned how to paint in, you know, high school. I got sick with because of turpentine. I was inhaling that.
Oh my God. Who was your instructor? This is like
it was self-taught. It was in a shed in my backyard and I had no ventilation.
Oh my gosh.
I was just inhaling turpentine.
That explains a lot.
All right. Yeah. Well, I do have a B in this class right now. But I took an art class, and I had pretended to be someone who wanted to be an artist in that class. And I ended up, we were on the Clarvet Courtyard. It was like an exhibition, and I was able to like show off some stuff I made. I was honestly pretty proud of it.
I want to see it. Yeah.
So you're an artist. I want you to talk about that. You know, how'd that go for you?
How did it start? This is interesting, because if I want to talk about it with a student, there is a different way that I talk about art with a student than I do like other people.
Okay.
So, but I don't mind. So like, if this comes off like kind of like, I don't know, cringy. All right. Like, I don't really talk about it this way. This is like, I'm going to talk to you all, 'cause you know, I'll pretend that you all are in my office and everything like that.
Right? I'm cringe.
Okay.
All right. You can talk to me.
No, but like, but it's kind of like, you know, I've always enjoyed doing art, so mm-hmm. it's not like I was like a like I didn't have like a passion for it, and I wasn't tapped into that vibe. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I got really serious in it, and really it's because like you know it's just I just enjoy going after the hardest things you could do. Mm. Like you know like I if you look at, like if you want to just look up my background, nothing there's nothing coherent. There's nothing like yeah. there's not a natural path. I mean, mm-hmm. who's an attorney that then runs a quasi you know public agency, then quits and then does a software company mm-hmm. and then becomes a professor?
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like none of that is actually a real through line. So, but art. So like I went after it because I was like, what's the hardest thing you could do? Mm-hmm. And I was just doing the hardest things.
Yeah,
surfing and portraiture. Portraiture is the hardest thing you do. So I just went after it, man, because I wanted to. Because I'm like, I could do it.
Yeah,
you know, when you have like when you're confident in like learning, and you know, there's a thing where you could tap into just like a kind of a like a universal consciousness of like learning. Mm-hmm. You just get good at learning things, at learning. So I can learn anything. So I was just like, so I went after portraiture and I could, you know, like I got really good at portraiture.
Nice.
Which then lets you do any art. If you could do a portrait, you could do anything.
Hmm.
I could paint anything now because I can do portrait. That's the hardest thing, to get someone's likeness.
Hmm.
And then someone's like, "That yes, that's me. That is you." I mean, try to draw somebody. It's gonna, you know what I mean? So I love it. I'm passionate about it because I love being able to capture. There's things that we could talk about, like what you could do with it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But like a law degree, I think my ability to do art really helps me do a lot of other things that I normally wouldn't be able to do.
Yeah. I might be biased because I also do very random things, but it's nice to kind of be cosmopolitan in that way.
Yeah.
Where you're able to have a conversation with anybody about almost anything because you've kind of extended yourself in all of these directions in the world.
Yeah.
Art is one of the more respectable ones because it's something where you can always push yourself because it's a very internal battle.
I keep doing it.
Yeah.
I keep doing it.
Because there is no like material constraint on you from improving.
Yeah.
You know, it's all within you.
It's you talk to like the greatest artists in the world and they're like, I'm still trying to get this down. And you're like, are you, that's awesome. Yeah. You know what I mean?
No amount of money could make you a better artist.
Yeah. You just got to keep doing it and just keep exploring and see where you go. Yeah.
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 That's one of the nicer things.
That tells you, that's lessons. That's why, like, you know, you're telling me that, you know, that you're trying to be an artist. It's like, no, that's all artists are trying to be artists.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you're tapped into a thing, and that helps you do other things. It's pretty cool.
Well, mine was professional practice, so I was trying to be an artist as a profession, which I was not trying to do. I love to draw. I love to draw.
I've seen it. I think you have seen some of your doodles.
Oh, shoot.
Right.
Yes, I'm doodling.
Doodle I drew on the exam sheet.
Yes, you're right. You have seen some of that. Yeah. Well, those are some of the more... I've started getting out there with my doodles.
One of the hurdles of being an artist, and I encourage everybody to do it, is to draw in public.
Yeah.
So, like, I will go to... So, shout out to Hyattsville Figure Drawing, Tuesdays at 6 o'clock in Hyattsville at Pyramid Atlantic. Live figure drawing.
Mm.
$15 for you all students. You go in there...
Wait, sorry. Is this a for-profit?
No, it's not.
Okay.
No, it's not.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, we have rules.
Yes.
but I'm not associated with it, but like that, like there's places where you could go and do art in public, and that really, like, you got to let go of stigma. You got to let go of like your conscience and everything, and you just do it for like joy. And people, like everyone's been in a place in their art. You know what I mean? But if you do it in public, then you could tap into the community with it.
Yeah.
You do it alone and, you know, like, it's only in your spiral notebook that no one can see.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how it should live. Let people see your stuff. Everyone, like, even the best artists that are out there, they remember when they were doing that. And that brings joy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'll look at where people are in their art journey. I'm like, oh, my God, that makes me so happy.
Mm.
I love that part. You know what I mean? And And it's like, that's just wonderful to be in. I love it. You know what I mean? So, like, you know, do more of it out and about. That's good. It's good for you. You know what I mean?
That's very thoughtful. That's very thoughtful. Yeah.
I don't know if that's interesting to everybody out here.
No. I'm sure people will find it very, I'm sure people will find it interesting. Yeah. We talk about a lot of things that don't matter, but I think that's one of the few things that we've talked about on this show that matters on a very philosophical level.
I'm glad I ruined the show then. Yeah. With the last minute.
We're not allowed to talk about things
The last minute I ruined it with something that actually matters.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're getting down to the close. That was a great way to close out the episode.
Yeah.
That was a great way to close out the episode.
Thanks for inviting me here.
Absolutely. Thanks for being on here. This is building
the
credibility.
You all don't even know. The vibe here is very like Joe Rogan show. There's like protein powders and like a lot of like beef jerky here.
Yeah. Well,